hummingbirds.
Hey.
You know, I was moving the bongo drums around the studio here, and I read a news story, and it looks like the President Orange Hair's family is going to be exonerated in advance of even finding out what they actually did. So I had a little, you want to hear this one? You do? All right. Okay. So Junior and Ivanka and Jared, too, would all wind up in a cell with no view. So before they dig up the bodies in the garden, I'm going to call Bill Barr and talk about pardons. Hey, pardon my kids. And how about Rudy Giuliani? They're all guilty of sin. Just raise your hand if you're in. Jamming. I'm doing the vaccine jam this morning. It is Pirate Radio from Chicago. It's 5 after the hour. It's Bleat Dot Network on a Wednesday. This is the 2nd of December. It is vaccine day, as we predicted. The Brits gave emergency authorization today to Pfizer's Corona vaccine. How about it? You know, the first thing we need to do is to name it. I don't know what they're calling it. You can call me up. I hope it's easier than Remdesivir. They're leaping ahead of the United States to become the first Western country to allow mass inoculations against a disease that has killed more than 1.4 million people worldwide. This decision is going to kick off a little bit of competition between us and the Brits. It's a vaccine co-developed by the American pharmaceutical giant Pfizer, and it may intensify the pressure to get things going over here on this side. The go-ahead bodes well for Britain, which broke from the European Union's regulatory orbit to approve that shot early. It's going to have no effect on the distribution of the hundreds of millions of doses that other wealthy countries have procured in prepaid contracts. Did you know that in Europe they've reserved a vaccine? That's how it goes. This also offers not so much relief to people who are poor and countries that are poor. They couldn't afford to do that. They couldn't afford to reserve the supply in advance. Anyway, the Pfizer vaccine developed with BioNTech, which is a smaller German firm, must be transported at South, this is a New York Times, at South Pole-like temperatures, a requirement that could dictate who will be vaccinated first in Britain. Government said on Wednesday that 800,000 doses would be available by next week for health workers to begin administering for Britain, which has suffered one of Europe's highest per capita death rates from the virus. The decision by its drug regulator testified to a vaccine strategy that's been most aggressive in the West. And here in the United States, an independent panel advising the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention voted yesterday to recommend that residents and employees of nursing homes and similar facilities be the first people in the United States to receive coronavirus vaccines, along with healthcare workers who are especially at risk of being exposed. This comes from the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. Robert Redfield, Dr. Redfield, expected to decide by today whether to accept that as the formal guidance and let us know about that. The states are not required to follow the panel's recommendations, but they generally do. And we're going to get into this in detail and in depth with Dr. Paul. Just a couple of minutes here. At eight after the hour, and it is, in fact, where are the bongo drums? It is, in fact, a moment to talk about, well, we don't have a good word for the Nuremberg trials. I think it's the Mar-a-Lago trials. That's what I see, right? We get them down there. Aaron and I were talking about this yesterday. See, they're all in handcuffs, but they have on sports shirts. Huh? All right. President Trump has discussed with advisors whether to grant preemptive pardons to his children, to his son-in-law, and to his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. I talked with Mr. Giuliani about pardoning him as recently as last week. Well, you know why it is? Because Rudy does something actionable pretty much every day. Mr. Trump told others that he is concerned that a Biden Justice Department might seek retribution against the president by targeting the oldest three of his five kids. That'd be Donald Jr., the brains of the family, Eric Trump, and Ivanka, as well as Ms. Trump's husband. That'd be Jared Kushner. Donald Trump Jr., of course, has been under investigation by Mueller. Trump had contact with the Russians and was trying to offer up dirt on Hillary. Kushner provided false info to federal authorities about his contacts with foreigners. He lied on his to get his security clearance, then they gave it to him anyway. The nature of Mr. Trump's concern about any potential criminal exposure of Eric Trump or Ivanka is unclear. That's right. About Ivanka, who's the guy that invented Trump? Steve Bannon, quoted as saying that she was as dumb as a box of rocks. So, anyway, that's the first family. It is. You know what today is? Let's settle back for just a second. Today is Mutt Day, and then we'll talk about humans.
If you're in the market for a dog, you couldn't do better than to go to your local animal shelter and get yourself a mutt. Mutts are incredible dogs because they are so versatile and so eager to please. They're obviously mixed breed dogs, they're hybrids, they're the product of random breeding back and forth, up and down. And so because they weren't bred for one specific purpose, They're not showing intense behaviors like some terriers do, some hounds, some very specific groups of purebred dogs, which are bred for those behaviors, to hunt, to go after rats. So when those purebred dogs get stuck in an apartment, for instance, and they don't have the outlet for that hardwired natural instinct, they start to go berserk, and it's understandable, but a mutt is very laid back. They are combinations of two or more dogs, sometimes three, four, five, six different breeds go into one mutt. So what you get there is you get a dog whose main purpose and desire is to please you and to do whatever it is you want to do. So if you like to go jogging, they'll come jogging with you. If you like to sit on the couch and watch TV, they'll do that too, happily. So they're very attuned to your lifestyle and very adaptable. And really, they're the all-American dog. You couldn't do better. It's like the canine melting pot.
Oh, sorry. I was trying to follow along here. It is, in fact, National Mutt Day. This is December the 2nd. I don't know why they also celebrate it on July 31st. I don't know why. National Mutt Day, it's all about embracing, saving, and celebrating mixed breed dogs. I know. We've been talking about pets. I do not have a pet here. I have thoughts and suggestions. We may have to do fish at some point. So, yeah. Tell you what. Let's do this, should we? And then we will infiltrate the medical community. And just remember, the words that you like to hear.
Take it from me. I am a doctor.
Come on. what you say.
And we're back with Dr. Paul. I've infiltrated the medical community again as Deepfoot. And Dr. Paul, what's in the car? I brought you some vaccine. I'll bring it out. It's a gift basket. I'm going to cheese one.
And I get it right in the right cheek.
Listen, this morning I'm on the air here. I'm reading all about the Moderna and Pfizer. And after a fairly long little bit, I realized I had just read their press releases. That there's no objective comment. I said at the time I'm going to see Dr. Paul, I asked him, but we really have no immediately accessible, credible source.
Well, if you believe the Pfizers and the Modernas of the world, they're going to produce a credible paper. I mean, that's what the FDA is supposed to scrutinize, right? That the research that they're doing is ethical and credible. What we like is an independent, unbiased party to then reevaluate and see if they can prove what they're doing. And keep in mind, vaccine trials are different than most medical trials, right? If I'm giving you an antibiotic, you clearly have the infection that I'm giving you the antibiotic for, and I can see directly if it works. We don't do that. It would be an unethical trial if for me to say, I'm going to give you a vaccine. You don't have the virus yet. I'm going to give you a vaccine. Then I'm going to stick you in a room full of the virus and see if you survive. We can't do that. So we have to give a vaccine to somebody and then see what happens. And that's a really hard ask, especially in a short period of time, to get enough people to know whether or not they were really exposed and are really immune.
Well, aren't the Pfizer and the Moderna are both two-punch ideas, right? They require two doses?
Correct.
So in that, I'm assuming it requires follow-up. You just don't go on and they hit you in the arm. And is that a hypodermic syringe that goes into your arm? So
both of the injections are either intramuscular or subcutaneous. So yeah, there'll be a hypodermic syringe that's going to go into your arm. The problem with a study like this is if I were to just take 200 people or 30,000 people, and take Chicago, and give me 30,000 people to watch, and I'm going to enroll you in a study and see how many people get COVID, okay? Those people in the study, knowing that they're being watched, are most likely gonna take really good precautions. They're gonna avoid public gatherings. They're gonna wash their hands. They're gonna wear masks. They're gonna do all the right things, right? So how do I know what the prevalence of COVID would be in that group of people? Because nobody might get it in the 5 months, 6 months that I'm watching them. So here's a drug that they've been injecting in people for about 6 months. And in those 6 months, the only group that we can look at are the people that came down with COVID. So of the 45,000 some odd people in the Pfizer study, you had 173 people get COVID that were not vaccinated, and you only had like 20 something that were. Now, were the 20-something, I mean, that's a big difference. So there's some efficacy there, but to what degree? Because we don't know how many of those people in the study were exposed. How many people, the vaccinated people, felt, I'm immune, I'm gonna go out and test this. Especially the placebo people, we don't know. So there's this disconnect between the statistics of what we want it to be and the statistics of what it really is.
See, I think that there's a sense, and I'm Mr. Optimism here, and I don't want to rain on people's parade, but I get the sense the word premature is somewhere in my consciousness, and I sense that something's premature here. Do you agree with that or not?
Well, it is.
I don't know what's premature.
I think that what we've gained information on these trials is that it looks like these injections are going to be safe. We don't have tons of side effects because 45,000 people got it and you haven't seen crazy side effects to them. So I think that from a safety profile, we're looking okay. I can't guarantee that, but it looks okay.
The side effect would be like you and I were just talking about my antibiotics, which gave me a stomach upset.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Something like that. Okay. You know, whatever the side effect might be. There doesn't seem to be any, in the short term, side effects. Long term side effects, we don't know. But in the short term, we don't see any.
And long term is because it builds up in the body, perhaps?
It could, and it could alter something else. Remember, these are messenger RNA viruses. I mean, messenger RNA vaccines. So we don't know what the long-term, they've never been used before. So we don't know what the long-term issues might be with these that we might see. But as of right now, we don't see any damage from them. So that's the good part. How effective they will actually be at reducing the virus. This isn't, we're going to all get the two shots and we can get rid of our masks.
No.
That is just absolutely ludicrous. Because we might find out that 50% of people that got the vaccine could still get this. I don't know the number. Nobody does. Pfizer doesn't. Moderna doesn't. Nobody knows how many people will get the virus after the vaccine.
That's the thing. You and I talked about this, and I played that segment on the air, and one of the things that I thought was important that you were conveying to me that I wanted to convey to people that I little I know about science is that you have to duplicate studies. One-offs doesn't work. It was good that we had a good night on a Friday, and now we can't duplicate.
Right.
As I read these things from all these, that's what it seems to me. They say, well, you know, we had a good time last week. It really worked well. But, and as you read the efficacy stuff, you know what I'm getting
at. Well, but it goes even deeper than that because it's unethical. It's not like we could take, I don't care if you took 100 people. We're going to take 100 people. We're going to lock you all in a hotel room. We're going to give half of you a vaccine, and then we're going to spray this hotel with COVID, and we're going to see how many people get sick. And if nobody gets sick from the vaccined group and all of them get sick on the other, it's 100% effective, right? But we don't work that way with vaccine trials. And that's why I say it's different than an antibiotic trial where somebody actually has the illness and we give you a medicine to see how it works. That's different. This is prevention. We're not exposing people to the illness. So I don't know how many people would have gotten the illness with or without the vaccine.
Aren't the old vaccines dead antibodies?
So some were attenuated virus, some are pieces of the virus.
I don't know about attenuated.
So they take a virus and they alter the virus, so to speak, to make it so that it won't actually make you sick, but it triggers your immune system. And those were things that you could directly measure. This is a different kind of virus. This is coding your DNA, basically, inside your body to say, don't let this virus in. And we don't know what it's going to do. We can't measure it. We don't know how long these vaccines will last. We just don't know what they're going to do yet. Am I going to get one? Probably. But
I don't have to talk you into it because you are the front line. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Dr. Paul here. I'm not under anesthesia, but I should be. The governors, by and large, are going to be the deciders here. The states are, and theoretically, the healthcare workers, people like yourself, are going to be the first to get offered, you know, the Kool-Aid. I mean, the vaccine. there's an enormous part of the country that doesn't even they don't even want this.
Right.
So you factor that in anyway.
There are people that don't want polio vaccines. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, right? So, you know, I get that. But at the same time, you look at this and you say, I need some tools to fight this virus. And we have some that are working well of patients that have it. Remdesivir seems very promising right now. There's a new similar analog to that.
I'm glad you brought that up because when the remdesivir, when they approved that, every news story and they said, well, that's the drug that Trump took as if. I mean, how many zillion people have been on that?
Right, yeah.
There was some connection to like, well, Trump, you know what I mean? And so I wanted to sort of move.
Yeah, no, I mean, he certainly took that, and we've been using it months before he took it.
Exactly.
And it's been shown to be very effective. I mean, really, I have a close friend that we thought he was going to be in the hospital for a week. Two doses of remdesivir was home.
Wow.
So, I mean, he did outstanding. So there's some promising stuff. And remember, when SARS hit, or MERS even, you know, it was treatment that eliminated people being in the hospital. It wasn't vaccines.
Well, that's that's the thing. And again, what you just said, here's a guy, two doses, and he's better. And then somebody down the hall died in an hour and a half. That, I think that's what's hard for people to understand.
Yeah, and I think that we don't understand it. As a healthcare provider, we're not sure. You know, yes, there's risk factors that make somebody more susceptible, but you know, people don't read the textbooks. Oh, you know, you're supposed to be in worse shape than this person. Why is that person sicker, right? So, you know, what happens inside our body is unique. Somebody has a really bad response to this virus. They're young, they're healthy, and there still might not be anything we can do. So we have to still find that magic drug, the silver bullet, so to speak, to help that. But I don't know if we figured that one out yet.
We're talking to Dr. Paul. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and save the world. Stand by.
We want to talk to you about medical emergencies.
The kind that would result in a visit to the ED before the coronavirus hit.
The kind that would start with chest pain and sweating.
Or with difficulty speaking and drooping of the face.
Or an accident like a fall or the slip of a kitchen knife.
These are still the kind of emergencies that require a trip to your local emergency department.
Despite this pandemic.
We assure you, hospitals are doing everything possible to keep emergency departments clean and safe.
And we are here to provide care to you and your family, but you must not delay.
Because when it comes to your health, time can be the difference.
Between life and death.
If you experience a medical emergency, call 911 or go to your local emergency department.
Dr. Paul joining us again as we talk about the vaccine that all of us have been talking about. None of us have seen. I can't even prove it exists. And the only person that's having a really good day today is the chief executive officer of Pfizer. I heard he went to lunch early and hasn't been heard from since. But the vaccine, it's...
So I think that it's promising. We had lunch in the cafeteria, a couple of us, a few days ago, and we were talking about it, and it's really promising because you look at it and you say, okay, such a small number of people that got the actual vaccine got sick.
Sorry.
No.
Okay.
But
he's waiting for me to have the
But, you know, again, when you put people into these studies, the numbers always go down anyways. So if I wanted to look at just how many people got the flu, and I tell a group that I'm studying you for the flu, my guess is that people change their behaviors.
Isn't that, I gotta stop you. The whole idea of a placebo.
Right.
That if I know that I'm you know, you got the good stuff, and I had some water. If I'm aware of that, then that dirties up the results. Right?
It does, but these people didn't know. They got a saline injection, and they thought that they had it. And if you look at the numbers, there were 95% more people in each one of these studies that got sick on the placebo side than on the other side. That doesn't mean 95% effective, though. And that's where we keep making this jump. We keep saying, oh, this vaccine is 95% effective. 95% more people got sick on the placebo arm than on the other arm. That doesn't mean that if you were exposed and you got a vaccine, we don't know the rate of infection yet. That's the wild card. That's the part we don't know.
Unfortunately, so many people just disregarded everybody's advice and had these super spreader Thanksgivings. if you're already infected, the vaccine is not going to help you.
Nothing. Zero.
So, all right. Well, I'm shaking my head here because it all sounds so simple. It sounds so simple. We're going to have it in a couple of weeks here, and oh my goodness, it's coming.
I mean, I think that there's some valid reasons to take the vaccines, but it doesn't negate what we really need to do is control air ventilation. We need masks. We need the proper masks. And we need to distance for a little while.
And the doctor and I are maintaining some social distance for both masked God willing, other people will start doing that. But you can't make it, you can't, I was going to say you can't force them to do that, that's for sure. You can't even seem to convince them it's a good idea.
That's the amazing part, is that there's controversy over the masks, and there's such good data on it by real studies that really show the efficacy. And if everybody were masked up, 70% reduction, and we know that. That's just it.
We do know that, and if you look at, I saw a tremendous chart the other day, and the correlation between the places like South Dakota, where the governor is like, she may as well be passing around people to use each other's toothbrush up there. They have skyrocketed. Yeah. They're up. I think they're number one in terms of
56% of the
so,
yeah.
Again, I don't know. You can't.
It's insanity.
It's
just insanity.
Let's end on a happy note here.
Well, I mean, I do think that the vaccine does look promising, you know, so there's that, you know, we'll have to see, you know, how many people still get sick after they get the vaccine, but, you know.
Who gives you, who gives me the vaccine?
I don't know if they've rolled that out yet. There's the infrastructure looks like the hospitals are going to get it, and you're going to go to the hospital or a pharmacy, and you're going to get it from a nurse. They're just going to be lining people up.
But as you said, we haven't exactly rolled that out yet. So this other story here where we're ready to roll 2 weeks?
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I know that they're working at, the hospitals are ordering freezers for the Pfizer stuff. They're getting, you know, refrigerated trucks, dry ice planes, all of this stuff. But, you know, until it arrives here and somebody says, here's the syringe, that's when I'll get excited.
I have actually ordered 4,000 Bud Light coolers to come. Deal.
Might work.
My best to your family. People listen to us who say this thing. These doctors, they don't know anymore than you do. Yes, they do.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'll call you up if I hear anything.
Thanks.
We have all the time in the world, time enough for life to unfold all the precious things love has in store. We have all the love in the world. If that's all we have, you will find we need nothing more. Every step of the way will find us with the cares of the world far behind. We have all the time in the world just for love, nothing more, nothing less, only love. Time in the world just for love, nothing more, nothing less, only love.
About it, Louis Armstrong, a song from a James Bond movie. I did not realize that. We were screening some stuff. James Bond came up, of course, Sean Connery passing, what was it, 2 weeks ago? So we had assembled all this stuff, and we had to drop our important stuff to do the election. So we have all the James Bond files here, and I pulled that up. That is from a James Bond movie. I was going over that friend of mine yesterday, and we just couldn't. I couldn't coordinate, like, you know, who was who. Roger Moore. No, we don't want that one. Anyway, that is Louis Armstrong. Of course, we hear him every day as we go out of the show here on the Bleat Network from Chicago at 23 before the hour. What a thanks I need to offer to Dr. Paul. You know what? I talked to this man who is, by the way, my foot's better. Thank you. It is. It is. And I'll tell you who told me that.
Take it from me. I am a doctor.
That's right. Danny DeVito said I'm doing better. Now, Dr. Paul, you know, I talked to him for 5 minutes, and I don't understand why the news is not more, just, it doesn't seem to be as close to the real story as it often should be. So anyway, that's the scoop. We're optimistic. We're doing our best here. How about this? Speaking of optimism, Attorney General Bill Barr acknowledged yesterday that the justice almost said that the sun comes up every morning. Acknowledged yesterday that the Justice Department had uncovered no voting fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election. Woohoo! We won again. We won again. The statement from Mr. Barr affirming Joseph R. Biden Jr.'s win served as a particularly harsh blow to Mr. Trump's efforts to overturn the results of the election. So that gone. And then down in Kentucky, Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, and the majority leader, who has refused to recognize Mr. Trump's election loss. I don't think they have phone service down there. And moved closer to overtly accepting the reality that Mr. Biden would be in the White House next year as he discussed the prospects for more pandemic stimulus in 2021. This is McConnell. So now get this. I'm going to read this. This is a quote. After the first of the year, there is likely to be a discussion about some additional package of some size next year, depending upon what the new administration wants to pursue. We got him. He's on record. He's on record. All right. More information about where babies come from the Senate Majority Leader. 21 before the hour. You know what? You know what? You know what? Yesterday was Woody Allen's birthday. Did you see Annie Hall? You did? Remember this one?
Oh.
Are you okay? What's the matter? Are you all right? What?
There's a spider in the bathroom.
What?
There's a big black spider in the bathroom.
That's what you got me here for at 3 o'clock in the morning? Because there's a spider in the bathroom?
Oh, my God. I mean, you know how I'm about insects. I can't sleep with a live thing crawling around in the bathroom.
Kill it. For God, what's wrong with you? Don't you have a can of Raid in the house?
No.
I told you 1,000 times you should always keep a lot of insect spray. You never know who's going to crawl over.
I know. And a first aid kit and a fire extinguisher.
All right, give me a magazine, because I'm a little tired. You know, you joke with them about me, you make fun of me, but I'm prepared for anything, an emergency, a tidal wave, an earthquake. Hey, what is this? What? Did you go to a rock concert?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, really? Really? How'd you like it? Was it I mean, was it heavy? Did it achieve total heaviosity, or was it?
It was just great.
I got a wonderful idea. Why don't you get the guy that took you to the rock concert? We'll call him, and he can come over and kill the spider. You know,
I called you. You want to help me or not, huh?
What is this? Since when do you read the National Review? What are you turning into?
Well, I like to try to get all points of view.
Well, wonderful. Then why don't you get William F. Buckley to kill the spider?
Alvy, you're a little hostile. You know that? Not only that, you look thin and tired.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning. You got me out of bed. I ran over here. I couldn't get a taxi cab. You said it was an emergency. I ran up the stairs. Believe I was a lot more attractive when the evening began. Are you going with a right wing rock and roll star?
Would you like a glass of chocolate milk?
Hey, what am I, your son? What do you mean? I came over for a.
I got the good chocolate.
Yeah, where's the spider?
Is
it in the bathroom? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hey, don't squish it, and after it's dead, flush it down the toilet, okay? And flush it a couple of times.
Darling, I've been killing spiders since I was 30, okay? It's a very big spider.
Yeah?
A lot of trouble. There's two of them.
Two?
Yep, I didn't think it was that big, but it's a major spider. You got a broom or something with a snow
shovel? It's at your house. I think I left it there. I'm sorry.
Let me have this.
Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Honey, there's a spider in your bathroom the size of a beetle.
Soon find out.
It's from the number one selling album of all time for a long time, I'm pretty sure. I got to look that up. The Eagles with the greatest hits. Speaking of which, at 14 before the hour here on Pandemic Radio from Chicago, I picked up the smart line phone, I should say. This is the one that you can contact us, and we hope that you do, 844-220-3300. And I looked at it, they transcribe it. Remember the other day, Aaron and I were talking to, we called the Statistical Association on their birthday to see if we could get a membership. Anyway, I picked this up, and it's just transcribed. And it's fine. I think, the text-to-speech and the speech-to-text, it's pretty good now. Anyway, this wasn't exactly close. I picked this up, and it's hi. It says, hi, this is your sister pool association returning your call. And I'm thinking, what? Yeah, it's from the Statistical Association. We will call them back, and you call us and say what you will, and we'll put it on the air if you want. It's 844-220-3300. On this day in 1969, the Boeing 747, the jumbo jet, a long-haul, wide-body commercial airliner, received its FAA airworthiness certificate, paving the way for its introduction into commercial service in 1970. Ah, the 747. I'd like to be on one right now. Well, maybe not right now. How about a couple of months? All right. Well, all right. All right. Okay. It's 1969.
With the jet set, the 747 is a giant among aircraft. It's 231 feet long. It can carry 490 passengers. Its top speed is 625 miles an hour, and production is surging ahead. Pathé News went to Seattle for a closer look at the mammoth aircraft. Soon, the world's airlines will have to choose between supersonic planes like Concorde with limited payloads or the slower liners of the stratosphere like the jumbo jet. The interior of the 747 is more like an hotel lobby than an aircraft. Seating is armchair style in the 21-foot-wide cabin with plenty of walkabout room for both passengers and cabin crew. Catering arrangements are a high priority. They'll have to cope with the two-deck requirements of several hundred people on flights of up to 6,000 miles. Out of the biggest hangar in the world came the world's biggest plane. Boeing already have orders for 167 of them. First deliveries are expected at the end of this year. Experts predict that Concorde and jumbo jets will operate side by side. The Anglo-French plane on the thinner routes, the American on the high-density ones. There's business enough for both, they say. Aircraft of these proportions could make flying for millions much more commonplace. Every statistic about the 747 is in a class of its own.
And when you fly the 747, when you get off and you land, you go to a Wendy's. Wendy herself, has been trained to take care of you.
Drinks, cold. Are you ready? Here we go. Soft drinks, lemonade, water, cold tea. It's up to you. It's up to me. Cold drinks come in 4 cups. Gotta know the size before you fill it up. Biggie, medium, small, kids meal. Keep it straight. It's a good deal. Use the scoop to fill with ice. Never use the cup. Take my advice. For soft drinks, fill the ice halfway. No matter the size, that's what I say. Tilt the cup and push against the lever. Keeps the foam down now. Isn't that clever? If there's still foam, let it settle down. Don't pour it off or your boss will frown. When you reach a quarter inch from the top, that's where you wanna stop. If the customers say they wanna stay, put the drink on the left-hand side of the tray. If the order's to go, put the lid on tight. Make sure it pops to do it right. Then hand that drink to the coordinator and tell the guest you'll see him later.
Don't forget to smile when you serve cold drinks. always say thank you to the guest. You're the one that can make the difference.
For lemonade, things stay the same, half full with ice. I said it again, fill the juice to a quarter inch from the top, just like you did the pop. Water is a courtesy to our guests. Use a small cup, you know the rest. Now it's time to serve cold tea, but the ice is different. Listen carefully. Instead of half full, fill it all the way up to the top of the cup. Add the tea, and if they ask for lemon, put it here. Now that's a given. Cold drinks, that's all there is to it. Go ahead and try. I know you can do it.
I'm ready. You know, some thoughtful person said, you know, we're never going to get these kids to, you know, make the drinks, you know, properly. Let's make a hip-hop record. That's a training video from way back when. It is 7 before the hour on Pirate Radio from Chicago. It's Bleat.network. On a Wednesday, we used to call that Hump Day back in the day. So get this. I saw this morning, you know, I'm kind of a Godfather guy. Got the movies. I not only do I have them on DVD, and then I for some reason I DVR them when they're on TV, and then when I'm there live and I'm watching and I'm like, what's on? I go watch it again. So imagine my excitement when I saw this morning. For a new theatrical and home video release this month, Francis Ford Coppola has rechristened the film as Mario Puzo's The Godfather Coda, The Death of Michael Corleone. That's the new name of three. The new name pays tribute to Puzo, his Godfather co-screenwriter, and of course, author of the original novel. I just was trying to remember if I never actually read that book. I'll think about that. Anyway, the director has changed its beginning and ending and made alterations throughout to excavate and clarify the narrative that he always believed it contained about mortality and redemption. This is all about Godfather 3. All right, okay. We'll see what that has. It's always interesting to tell people that I interviewed the baby in Godfather 2. That was Sofia Coppola, who is a tremendous director. She directed a movie called Lost in Translation and a bunch of other stuff. Anyway, she grew up and became Sofia Coppola, but she was in that movie, and I just remember that fondly. So, what about it? Mario Puzo's The Godfather Coda, The Death of Michael Corleone. All right, we're going to have to check on that. Was that it on the script? Oh, it is? Oh. I'm sorry. I didn't realize that we're going to get out of this alive. All right, Godfather coming out. Thanks for indulging us this morning here. Coming up tomorrow, it's Thursday, and coming up on Friday, I think we're going to do another installment of the Crooked Fixed Game Show. We'll do that if we can. I'm excited. We've got a number of premises. We've got the Radio Rebus. We have some new stuff. I have a word thing. I thought we'd match people together with each other and you know, see who knows words. I thought that was interesting. And then, what about this? I didn't even realize the possibilities here yesterday. Sparks sent me a list of Christmas movies as we get ready to hit the holidays. And as I started to read the synopses, I thought, oh, this would be a great quiz. All right, give me an example. All right, what do we got here? Let's see here. Okay. All right, how about this? Let's see here. An 8-year-old troublemaker must protect his house from a pair of burglars. Home Alone, yes! Yes, it's Home Alone. All right, we will do that. Thanks for giving me a reason to get up in the morning. See you tomorrow. This is Natasha Rodriguez's production, and have a good day today.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. Watch them grow, they're like much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.